This is Radio EduTalk. My name is John Johnson. I'm sitting in Glasgow, Scotland. And this is episode, I'm thinking seven, of
it is seven.
Loose Learners. With me, as usual, is Mariana Finnis. Good evening, Mariana.
Hello. It is definitely episode seven.
Yeah. It's maybe the clock's going back has confused me. So we're both teachers. I'm a primary teacher. Mariana teaches in higher education. And we're both really interested in using the web to teach and learn. And our show is about sort of all things internet. And our main aim in life is to answer the question, is the internet good or bad for education? And the answer is...
Yes.
Yes. So we go. We're here every Wednesday on the first of the month. So next time we'll be back is on the 6th of December before we'll have a wee break of a month till January the 10th. And today we're going to talk about digital and analogue reading. We've touched on this sort of thing before, Mariana. And just as a sort of brief introduction, I think it kicked off by a blog post, and I was just saying to Mariana before I came on, I wrote two posts at the weekend. One which took me, I think, 2 or 3 weeks, and the other that took me 5 minutes, and of course, even less. And the one that has 5 minutes garnered lots of interest and comment. And it went like this. Just discovered I had a Goodreads account, started and abandoned in 2010. I've been finding that I'm not recalling the title of books I read in Kindle and thinking about making some tracking notes. I'll give this another go. So I don't know about you, Mariana. Do you use any of these services to...
I may be one of the people that has a kind of lost account there in Goodreads. I had very good intentions to organize everything there, to write reviews, to put all my notes, and you know how it is. Mm-hmm. And it never happened. And then I realized really that Goodreads, a lot of that is really around kind of sharing your reading with others and learning from other people who are reading the books that you're reading, etc. And I guess, I mean, I think I said as one of my comments to your blog post, for me, you know, reading isn't something that I'm very sherry with. So I don't have public highlights for my Kindle. I don't tweet my highlights for my reading. You know, read your own damn book. So I'm not very sherry with my reading. So I haven't tried the Goodreads. What I do, I mean, clearly the Kindle highlights I do use a lot. But they have always been, you know, what people would say, not great and not very serviceable. But for me, it was always worked fine. You know, they just gave you a big list of stuff that you could use and manipulate for whatever use, you know, in terms of your education, your teaching, you wanted. But now recently they've changed that and they've turned it into a more of an app and a sort of, you know, jazzy looking thing. But behind the scenes, and I haven't confirmed this, so don't quote me. I got suddenly last weekend, or I was reading on the Kindle, and I got this thing, this message that said, "You have used up so much percent of what's now allowed by the copyright holders in terms of notes and highlights," and it made me stop because I wondered whether now, because they've got everything organized differently, they are going to be putting limits as to how much, you know, like you can, when in terms of copyright, what you can actually quote or not quote when you're writing a paper or when you're publishing. And I haven't investigated it, but it is on my list of things to investigate, because that would be really annoying if they're going to start tracking.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe people could highlight whole chapters. I don't know. I've had a Kindle for a while now. It's one of those old ones with the buttons for typing, so I inherited it, but I don't use any features at all other than reading it. And the only feature I do is adjusting the text size big enough for me to see. And I've never highlighted anything. I can't say it really delights me, the Kindle. And
no, it's not delightful, no.
I mean, the screen is pretty good to read. It's in the sun and things, it's better than reading a phone or anything like that. But I kind of just use it because it's quick to get a book, and I can share books with my wife, I suppose, because we've got one Amazon account between us. But I think I read differently on it. And one of the things I noticed is I can't actually tell you, if you said, what are the last three books you've read? Mm-hmm. I would have trouble telling you, because very often when I'm reading something on the Kindle, I don't know what it's called and I don't know who the author is.
I know, because the way, particularly the actual device, if you're using the app in other devices, is a little easier. But if you're using their thing, I know exactly what you mean. It's like often you have no real information unless you go back to the front or back to this. And of course, if you've got an old one, you can't navigate very easily.
No, it's rubbish. And you go back to the front and then you go, if you hit the back thing, you get back to where you were. But if you don't, it's quite sometimes you end up flicking through pages trying to find out where you were. Especially as I usually read books that have already been read by my wife. So the furthest point you have read is the end. So if you go to the furthest point I've read, you've gone to the end. But it's like when you pick up a book, you see the author's name, you see the cover, you begin to get some sort of memory built up of it. And nowadays, I tend to be somebody who just reads books really sort of last thing at night. I maybe read for 15 or 20 minutes. So I'm reading through a book, and it takes a wee while. If you're reading it 15 or 20 minutes ago, it takes, you know, a week or two sometimes to read a book. And I can be halfway through and think, I wonder who this book's by or what this title is. And at that point, I can't be bothered flicking back, so I don't. And you know, you get to the end of it, and unless I discuss it with somebody, I'll probably never remember what it is. And that's why I wanted the Goodreads account.
But also because if you do that, you can write things, you can work out, and then also you can read reviews, quotes, and things. But isn't it interesting? Different people's different reading strategies. I could not read one page of any book unless I knew who the author was, what the title was. I had read some reviews around it so that I would have gone, okay, so I've got a sense for... I wouldn't be able to. I wouldn't be able to concentrate. Isn't it interesting?
Yeah, no, I read what I'm told, mostly. I say, give me a good book, and Dorothy will say, I'll read that one.
Oh, well, that's lovely, but that's because she probably knows where your taste.
Well, she's trying to improve it, I think. she's working on it. But the whole thing about reviews, this is another thing I've realised since I reopened the Goodreads thing, because I put in the last few books I'd read, and I realised that all I actually want is to record it. I don't actually want to write a review. At all, really. I might want to write notes that will remind me about it, but they wouldn't be intelligible to anybody else. And I don't want to sit, I don't even, you know, I actually didn't realise this until I said, right, I've finished reading this book, and I'll click finished in Goodreads in the browser, and it comes up with a big box for your review, which is like a blog post box or whatever. And at that point, I realised I wasn't actually at all ready to say, write something like a review. What I wanted to write was, oh, you know, basic notes, this book's interesting because I just read something else which connects to it, and I saw something the other week that connects to that. But that wouldn't have any meaning to anybody else.
But that sounds to me like what you need. One of the things I think I mentioned that I use, because I found the highlights in Kindle, I do use them, but they are they weren't great. But Laura Gibbs on Twitter, she at some point recommended this thing called clippings.io. I use it and I store as a kind of backup because I've had some bad experiences with the highlights on Kindle. I store my highlights there and I group them and I do various things. But as an app, if you like to do that and you like to connect what you're reading, it can do all of that. It can actually, it can even, as I was reading before today, I was reading a little bit more about what it could do. And it looks like it's even able to create connections between the notes that you write on different books. And you can use tags, etc., so you can connect things up. So that might be a thing that
I'd have to find out how to make whatever they call them on the Kindle.
Because you have to, because without that as a starting point, you can't download to the clippings.io effectively what it does is imports your Kindle highlights. So you can manipulate after that. But I suppose if you're not doing that even, then I guess that would be difficult.
I'm realizing, I don't want my phone in the bedroom where I usually read. That's one of the reasons I read the Kindle is I used to use the Kindle app on an iPad, but I decided I didn't want that in my bedroom because, 2 minutes later I switched to my email and then I'm having a wee kick at Twitter and reading some RSS feeds and then I'm wide awake because somebody's said something wrong on the internet,
Exactly, and you need to fix it immediately.
It needs to be fixed, or somebody sends you a message, or some people really love emailing at 11 o'clock at night, and I don't, but I can't not answer an email if somebody asks me a question and want an answer. So I like to go into the bedroom and have nothing there that's going to distract me.
But, this is more about, what works for John, but also it's also useful, hopefully, for other people to think about this. Because one of the things I suppose you could do is to have an old phone that where you've deleted all the apps and everything, but just have the Kindle app, and then you'd be able to use it more easily than the actual Kindle device, which is, particularly if you've got an old one, is really quite clunky.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that would be a way. I suppose then you wouldn't have the distractions.
The other thing that I did on the day that I was writing this post, because then I got all these comments and I was starting to think about reading and the idea of recording what I read, is I went on to ABE Books, which is an online, and ordered several paperbacks because I just felt I actually like reading books better than I like reading reading in the Kindle.
At one point, I decided that, I was done with paper and everything was going to be, I wasn't ever going to do paper again. And that included, the books and things. But I must say, more and more what's been happening is I make choices about what I get on paper, what I get on screen. And more often than not, I hate to admit, I will buy both. Because a lot of what I read is for work and stuff. So, I think, it's interesting. I might read a book to see if I want to keep it, firstly on Kindle, and for highlighting. And then I go, oh, this was brilliant. I want to read this properly on paper.
That's interesting.
Isn't it interesting, isn't it? How the strategies we use. Yeah. And I'd never I hadn't consciously thought about it. But also, like you, I don't like to have lots of devices and things in you know, when I'm going to bed, and I like reading when I go to bed. I found myself doing the thing that they say children do when they see magazines these days, where they try to click on the magazine and they go, this is not working. I found myself doing that when I started to take back into the bedroom end of day paper books.
Yeah.
And I switched the light off, of course.
Yeah. Expecting to go to see in the dark, because it's not going.
Yeah. I would find myself laughing because you feel like a complete numpty. But going back to some of the conversations we've had in the past, the habit, an unconscious habit, that you go settle. Of course, I'm used to. I tend to use my iPad for reading if I'm using a device, and I'm used to that. And so, you know, you kind of, I'm settling with a paper book, and I switch everything off, and I go, oh, this is not working.
Probably just forgot to charge it, I think. But I mean, it is quite interesting, and I say I didn't really think about it that much. I mean, I know certainly my wife, who reads, I would say, fiction more seriously than I do, a lot more seriously, she says she reads in a different way when she's reading in a book, and if it's something that she really likes or something deep, she would much rather read paper. She says she reads faster on the Kindle, and it's more tendency to skim. And I don't know if that's because we're used to reading digital texts that are factual, and quite often I guess most people read a ton of stuff now online, and quite often what you're trying to do is find the information. You know, you just searched, how do I do this?
Yes, you're not reading in the sense that we understand reading, like the kind of reading that you would do before going to bed, where you're just wanting to settle in with some lovely text, or, you know, that is a different kind of, it's a different kind of experience than the kind of, you know, the scanning for, is this useful, not useful? It's not, you know, the one I would say is not really reading. It's much more, as you say, you know, is this information going to help me? Do I want to put it in my pocket to never be seen again? I never said that. Because I read everything I put in my pocket.
Yeah. But, I mean, a lot of stuff you do read is you're trying to find out something online. You want a bit of information. You're looking at Wikipedia. You're not really interested in the whole backstory, though it might be interesting, but you're just trying to find out, you know, something about Queen Elizabeth or whatever, you know, who that person was. And you're watching a movie or something. You're actually you're using your phone as a reference.
And now that I'm reflecting on reading and reading strategies, I also realize a lot of people like to have the Kindle because they say they can put lots of books to go on holidays with. I would never take a device to, I mean, I collect, so if I've, when I say, sometimes I say on Twitter, I've got my summer reading, it's a pile of books.
It's
a pile of physical books, and I order them. I start to plan ahead if I'm going to have time for just reading for a break or something, and my little pile starts to grow, and I get very excited about my little pile of, you know, books that I'm going to be reading when I'm going to have my break. I never think of using my Kindle for that. It's interesting, isn't it?
What drives
the choices that we make. But of course it is true. I mean, this thing that, you know, it does, people say that we read with less attention when we read on a device, that we don't absorb as much information. And also something that now people are researching, but I remember feeling quite strongly when I first started reading digitally, and I nearly abandoned it altogether, was that I have a kind of mental map of a physical book, so I can go and find things and how I remember titles, how I remember content. There is a internal kind of map that I have. So I remember that there might be this particular quote at the bottom of a particular chapter or in a page. At the bottom, it's at the top, it's in the middle. And of course, as you know, when every time that you get your Kindle started, and even if you move from one page to another, it changes the location of the text. And I found that really difficult to get used to. It really affects my memory. When you were talking about remembering, it does really affect my ability to remember the ideas and the content, because it feels as if I'm starting again every time. So these things that I do, when you say you don't remember, I do think they affect, you know, they affect our ability to remember and our memory in more ways than we care to, you know, to accept sometimes.
Yeah, no, definitely, certainly. I think that's one of the things we're starting to find out about using digital technology. And I guess one of the things we're experimenting with live for a lot of young people or whatever who are, they're becoming expanded. I don't mean educationally necessarily, just the whole shebang. It's a lot of people growing up not reading really now, because they'll read plenty, but it'll be on, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be online, they'll read rather than...
Well, they don't really, I mean, and this is, you know, you get me on my high horse about my experience with my students. You know, they don't know how to read anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean, you know, if they actually have to do a close read of what I would what they label difficult text, they really struggle. They really struggle. They need a lot of guidance. Mm.
But I wonder if it will change as people grow up completely with digital text, or will we, you know, just will there be a backlash and a change, or how is it going to go, or will e-readers become better in some way? One of the things I was thinking is that, you know, when the Kindle goes to sleep, it shows you pictures on the front.
Yes.
Why doesn't it show you the picture of the book you're reading? You know, that just seems like a no-brainer to me. Do you know, where's my book? Oh, there it is. What am I reading? Oh, I'm reading this, right? Okay, click here. And it takes you to the page. That would actually solve 99% of my problem here, you know.
So is it genuinely just about remembering title and author for you?
Well, probably a few other things, but I say I'm not, and I actually thought when I got the Goodreads thing, I think originally as well, I think it's a lovely idea where people follow, because it obviously, just going back in, I found that over, you know, the last 7 years since I last opened that account, lots of people had followed me, and I could see some of them had kept going on. I presume they just do it because you've got these auto-discovery things in all these platforms now. But you could see what they were reading. Some of them were writing, you know, quite detailed reviews.
I know. I think Alan mentioned Brian Alexander, didn't he, in the comments? Brian is amazing. He reads all the books. I mean, and I must say, I really appreciate, because although I'm mean and horrible and I don't communicate when I read, I do absolutely benefit from people who bother, because I read the reviews and I read all of that. And Brian is amazing. He finishes a book, and in no time the review is up there, and he's written a blog post, and you know, and you've got all this the information, and he really uses it a lot. When he does his reading clubs as well, and Goodreads, I mean, he uses that quite a lot. So I suspect that for him, it's a great resource to be able to do just what you described. So it's a record of everything you've ever read, including the review of what you thought about the book, and it forces you to reflect back on what you thought about the book.
Yeah, well, is that, as I say, I don't think I'm that deep a reader. And you know, I don't want to start trying to write a book. But what I might want to do is put links into something that I found. So I'm not sure if Goodreader is really designed, because it says review in that box. And I feel as if I just want to put, you know, I'd quite actually like maybe a way to connect to other books, you know, so I was just reading this book. The last one I finished was called Home Fire, and it's a sort of, it turns out to be, I didn't realise at the start, but a retelling of the Greek, I'm going to have to pronounce Greek words now, help. Antigone. So it was one of
those. Oh, Antigone, yes.
Okay. And I thought, all right, it's interesting, because I just read a wee while ago, a couple of months ago, another book called Jocasta and Her Children, which touched on that as well. And I also saw something in the Citizen Theatre in Glasgow a wee while ago that was a cycle of three Greek plays. And I think that's what I'm interested in. It's that sort of, all right, that reminds me of that, and remember that, and, you know.
So what you're really wanting is making connections between different things that you read and learn. I guess that isn't really good reads, is it? It would have to be more of a, I guess if you stored your notes in some kind of mind mapping, flow charting, you know, those kind of mind mapping software, might allow you to do, you know, links across.
I mean, I saw that sort of Wikity blogging tool by Mike Caulfield, but it seemed to get developed for a while and then disappear. But I thought that would be quite a good one to put that sort of thing in, you know, to sort of do that. I've never managed to settle to mind maps myself. I've liked them for kids, you know, to plan writing and things, but. Don't work for me. I just look at this and go, oh, no.
There is a software but I doubt it's for writers, and I doubt that you would, you know, you wouldn't want to, and it's not a free one, which is Scrivener.
I've seen a lot about that, but I've not.
And Scrivener does allow you to do just what you're describing, so that you can do all your research for writing a book, say, and you can connect across and you can do all of that. You know, but that would only be if you wanted to do some writing. But I don't know, why not? You know, you could use it just as a kind of aid memoir. Why not?
Have a wee look at some of these things. Quite a few people suggested a notebook.
you mean like an old-fashioned, tangible, physical paper thing?
Yeah, but the only problem with those is that the fonts in my notebooks are terrible. I can't read them. I don't know what it is. I just can't get a good font.
What you like is a kind of you know, like tags. You know, like when like that tags thing that does the network diagrams for Twitter. You kind of want one of those in your head so that it can kind of link to everything that you're reading. So a notebook actually doesn't really help you with the connecting.
Unless
you did a special system and so on. And it sounds to me like you're not very patient with that.
No, it also sounds, it's a real first world problem, this one, isn't it?
That's right. What shall we do in order to remember that bit better? Well, read the damn book again.
excuse me.
You're coughing.
Yeah, I'll edit that bit out. We'll probably, I think that's enough about noticing the difference. I think it's interesting. But you did pop another wee link in, which I haven't read completely, but I thought you'd like to maybe talk about it, which is this one about a college course.
Yes.
Which is a new course in a US university. And the headline is, college students clamour to get into a weekly 7-hour class on despair.
it's a good headline, isn't it? But I think it is the Huffington Post, isn't it? So I guess they go for this kind of headline. But the essence of that course, and I thought it was interesting in relation to what you were saying in your blog post, and I was saying through the conversation today, that actually we find it difficult to just sit and focus on one thing. like mm-hmm. reading a book, you know, like reading a book might be. So this guy, he's done a number of, you know, strange courses, as one might call it. And this one, it's really in response to the same observation that I have, which is that people have really forgotten how to read and they cannot concentrate. And so instead of complaining about that, he just said, well, why don't I make, you know, create a course so it becomes an assignment for them to come. They have to arrive. So it's a seven hour slot, and they have 4 hours where they have, there's no phone, there's no devices, there's no laptops, there's nothing. They can go to the toilet and come back, kind of thing, but that's it. So they have to be there and they can't move. They just read for 4 hours, and then the rest of the time, once they've spent that time reading the same book together, they then discuss it in small groups. And the idea, the reason for the despair thing, is because he asked the students what kinds of, you know, if they were going to come to this class, you know, what kinds of books they would find, they find difficult to concentrate on, but would really like to be able to get a hold of. And they often asked for books that were kind of challenging, difficult, about sort of life themes that were about how do you cope with difficulties in life. And hence the existential despair. So he's picked some books that effectively are about, I guess, kind of role modeling examples, ideas about, you know, how to tackle difficult situations. And they sit and read. And that's and they sit and read together, and they pair them up because they are all about challenging stuff. That he has the kind of small group discussion at the end of a few hours reading, but then also he pairs them up with the one person through the whole semester so that they can get some support of each other, you know, with anything that comes up as they're reading these books that are kind of challenging. I just think it's a wonderful way of helping people relearn, if there is such a thing, you know, how to concentrate and how it isn't easy, and how actually often you have to be willing to sit through the discomfort and the I can't concentrate and oh I feel tired, oh I can't be bothered. And if you sort of are able to kind of work through that, then you then get to that place where you can just concentrate and you can just read a book. But mostly I think we've forgotten that effort is needed.
Yeah, I wonder, was it easier? I'm thinking when I was young.
You were young.
I read, you know, big books, and anybody, you know, lots of people you knew read big, you know, War and Peace, for instance. You know, people read books, big, I think, in existential despair, you know, the sort of classic sort of things that people read in the 70s, I guess, would have been, you know, Russians and existentialism and the likes of that. And that doesn't seem as common now, perhaps. I mean,
well, I think there is a change that happens as we grow older, because, of course, we have different... it's not the same sitting down when you have, you know, nothing more to do but to find, you know, an interesting book to read, as when, you know, you're having to fit in reading in amongst all the other things that you're doing in life. So there is an age thing, I think, certainly. But what you're saying is also, is it the case that young people now are not doing that like we used to when we were young? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, young people nowadays. But it's almost like, I suppose, they've got more things to do. We didn't have
That's
the same
true.
Sort of distractions and things. And I mean, if I talk to my children at school who are much younger, they're like, I'm not expecting them to be reading Dostoevsky yet. but quite a lot of them don't read at all. In fact, some of them I was talking to the other day who were 8 years old. I was saying to one of them, what's that? We're talking about SpongeBob, obviously. And I said, what sort of things do you watch on the television? Do you watch SpongeBob? And he says, no, I don't watch the television.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what, you don't? He says, no, so I watch YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. He just said, I don't watch the television. But so this is, I was saying, you know, people don't read books, but people are not watching television either if they're eight. Most kids I've taught over my career of that age would have watched a fair deal of television, you know.
And I'm not sure how much of that is just us imposing our kind of sense of young people today, because if you, I mean, you can think of counterexamples to that, like, you know, when kids queued for hours and hours to get the next installment of Harry Potter and things like that. There are some books, you know, that still, I would say, young people, you know, will do that thing of just absorbing yourself in a book. Maybe it's harder to find the kind of book where that can happen, because that then brings in how books are written these days. You know, often they're kind of done to recipes, aren't they? So they're not compelling in the same way as they maybe once were. But of course, nothing takes, you know, there's not, as you say, there's nothing that takes it, okay, that stops you from picking, you know, some old literature. But I don't know. I don't know what the statistics are. It'd be interesting to find out what the statistics are.
Yeah, I'd be very, I don't suppose there is good statistics on, you know, who read what at what age and all the rest of it over time. But just anecdotally, I've been quite surprised about the differences. But probably shouldn't be, because maybe I wouldn't have read as many books if there had been, you know, a computer around, or, you know, a robot to play with or something like that. I'd have just played on the computer, you know.
My only concern, and when I do get on my kind of pet subject about reading, my only concern, and I guess you know this from past conversations we've had, is the lack of ability to concentrate on demand. And I'm not saying necessarily that you need to always be reading War and Peace or, you know, or all these sort of things, but I am saying that, you know, should you want to have that level of attention, concentration on the one thing, my experience is that certainly my students really struggle. You know, they don't get the thing that you have to, that there is an effort that is involved. They think they can just scan the same way as they scan their phones, and then expect to be able to, you know, to manipulate the information in a way that is more than just, you know, cutting and pasting. You know, I do have some concerns about, you know, what the technology is modeling for young people in terms of, you know, what it means to read and write.
I suppose that loops back very much to, you know, our concerns we've talked about a lot about, you know, what software is doing to us, and, you know, it's maybe not designed for the same things that we're used to, like books are or whatever, you know. So Anyway,
we've got 40 minutes. That's almost a half an hour, John.
Yeah, that seems.
So we should ahead.
There's there'll be a few good links to various things about reading and stuff in the show notes that we maybe haven't touched upon. I certainly think that college students one is really very interesting. 7 hours is a long time.
Well, I've done it as a daily stillness, as a suggestion for, you know, that you could. I mean, clearly you're not going to be, you know, on one day just, you know, be able to set aside that amount of time. But actually, I do think it's quite a nice practice where, you know, like you might say, I want to watch this particular movie, or I want to actually might you set, you know, an afternoon and pick one book and say, okay, and now I'm going to sit the whole after lunch, say, and until dinner, and I'm going to sit and only read this book without distractions. I think I certainly will try as a good practice, because I don't do that nearly as much as I once did. I only ever really do it on holidays, you know, and for me it still is one of the greatest pleasures to be able to just sit and read one book.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And again, maybe we sometimes miss these pleasures because we chase the shiny.
Yes. Indeed.
Anyhow, we shall be back on the first Wednesday of December, which scrolling through the Google Doc, the 6th of December for the last show of the year. If you're listening, thanks very much. Get in touch if you are interested in discussion further about any of the points we've talked about. I think we had a note in our show notes about meandering on the digital and analogue reading, and I think we certainly ticked that box well tonight. We've had a good wander down various streams, so hopefully it's been interesting to some folk, and we'll say good night now. Cheers, folks.